Images. It's a world-class, veteran-owned and operated Las Vegas-based photography company. Whether you need on-site or in-studio or on-location photography, be prepared to receive top-notch, innovative, and high-level professionalism from Q Images. While other photographers take photos, Q Images captures moments and creates memories. So go to qimages.smugmug.com or Instagram at Q_UE_images. Again, that is at Q_UE_images. Make sure you go and check them out. Tell them we sent you from the Help Myself podcast. And when you see the fly visuals, know that Q Images had a hand in it. Check them out. Super honored to have today's guest. I didn't know if I was going to be able to get her on the show. I'm a huge fan of her on LinkedIn and TikTok. And so I just shot my shot. And although she did put me in the friend zone, she did agree to come to the podcast. But today I'm honored to have Tammy Triolo, owner and founder of PCQ Consulting Firm. They specialize in DEI and company culture. She's also the creator of the empathy and the self-empathy scorecards, a personal development tool for people to learn whether they have empathy for themselves and others. That's the official bio, but let me tell y'all about her. Listen, I follow her. She is unapologetic about everything, but especially in the DEI spaces. But it's not about being mean or evil towards anyone. She's going to hold people accountable. She's going to hold herself accountable. She's going to say how she feels. She is going to challenge your beliefs. One of my favorite things is she said, when you come onto her page and you feel something about something she said, take some time and sit with it. Because it's usually not about her. It's about you. And listen, she says it all the time, but DEI isn't a catchphrase or something we inject into our culture. It's a lifestyle. And so, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. The goddess, hi, just kidding.
Oh, my goodness. Hello, everybody. Thank you, John. I am so happy to be here. Even though you are my friend, you are my friend.
Well, that's a good thing. I am your friend.
If you had me on your podcast and we weren't friends, I don't think that would work. Like, would your audience want to be having you interview somebody that you are dating? I don't think they would they?
I think they would. I think they would love that. My audience wants to see me win. I've been single, you know, they look at me as a high quality guy, so they're pulling for me. So I think they would love that.
Well, let your audience know that I don't even live in the same state with you, John. So you may want to tell your audience that, right? Like, John is in DC and Tammy is in Florida. We don't even live in the same state, so
I'm sure your audience
wants to see you win, and I do too. I want to see you with a lovely woman in the state of DC.
DC ain't a state yet, so you know, on that.
In the state of Virginia.
But here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to tell the story how it really goes, because she gave that old PR up, you know, public relations up answer. This is how it happened, you know. So I'm following her. I'm a big fan of her work, big fan of her social presence, everything. So I'm following her. And she posts something about Sagittarius men, which I am a Sagittarius. And so at this point, I'm just a fan. Like, you know, I comment and we, you know, we talk back and forth in the comment section, but I'm just a fan at this point. On TikTok, she made a whole video about my comment and I got about 1,000 followers from that video too. So thank you for that. But
are you serious? No.
Oh, yeah. About since then, maybe about 1,500 have looked at my profile since. Yeah, they had to go check me out because it's your fault.
Sisters is trying to get at you.
It's your fault though. You said that I was your LinkedIn crush.
Okay, can I be honest? You actually were my LinkedIn crush.
Hey, see? So that's why she's gonna call me her crush and then she's gonna put me in the friend zone before we ever meet.
No. Okay, so when I say you were my LinkedIn crush, right? Because a lot of the men that follow me on LinkedIn aren't really like engaged, right? And I was like, oh, this guy's like engaged, right? Like he comments, he likes, like you're engaged in my content. So when I say you are my LinkedIn crush, I mean like my professional LinkedIn crush, like. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense? No. But does that make sense? Like, you have like crushes, and then you have like those professional people that you like, that you respect. You're like, oh, that's a solid guy. Now,
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Is this just audio podcasting, John? Or
no, I'm putting a video out. Everything.
Okay, so the folks that will see this podcast, John is a very attractive man, right? Like if you got eyeballs, you're not gonna be like, oh, he's not attractive. He's a very attractive man. And so I would be lying if I didn't say that I thought John was a handsome man. And I do think he's a handsome man. I do. I just think John and I are good friends. We're good friends.
We're best dressed friends.
There's a lot.
We're gonna pay picture because I'm gonna go out to Fort Lauderdale. Oh man, I didn't mean to put all your stuff out there, but I'm gonna come out there, man. We're gonna go out, grab a bite to eat, and we're gonna be dressed to the nines. We're gonna take pics. We're gonna show off.
You know, I was thinking about that. I was like, now here's the thing, John. We could do here's that on LinkedIn, but I think if we put that on TikTok, I'm going to have people going, so sis, what you gonna do? You know, because people, the TikTok crew is a little bit different than the LinkedIn crew. The LinkedIn crew,
just a little bit.
LinkedIn crew would see it as, oh, this is a professional connection. Tammy and John met on LinkedIn. John was down in that area. They had lunch or dinner or whatever, and they took photos. People would leave it at a professional. TikTok would hound me.
Oh, well, then I'm going to put it all over TikTok.
Don't do that. They would hound me.
You need to be hounded. No. I'm trying to win. Tammy, come on now. I ain't worried about all that. I'm trying to win.
You're trying to win.
Y'all know how I am. Y'all know how I am. I definitely have to share how, with all of the foolishness that I'm deadly serious. Because thank you for the compliment, but y'all see her. She is lovely, glorious, intelligent, well-spoken, passionate. Yes. And you know, just wait till y'all see the promo, man. She is everything and more. So, you know, how could I not be smitten? You know what I mean?
John, I was like, John, don't do this now. Because, you know, John, people are not going to know that like we're having like playful, friendly banter here. Do you know what I mean? Like
anybody that knows me knows that. I mean, listen, it's playful banter, but I'm just saying. I'm just saying. I ain't talking about nobody. I'm just talking about what I'm talking about. That's all.
Okay. Well, John, you know, I think I said this to you on TikTok. There hasn't been a man yet that's ever made it out my friend zone. And
all it takes is one. Okay. That's all it takes is one. You could date 100 guys, but all it takes is one to be the one.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Because after you find the one, all the rest of those other 99 weren't the one. I'm just... Anyhow, listen, y'all. But definitely, you see how engaging she is? And just the way that you show up is just so inspirational to me. Because... And I'm getting into it kind of fast, but
go right ahead.
There was a conversation that I was having with a couple of my coworkers, some of my good friends, and you know, we were talking about Tim Wise, and we were talking about that phenomenon. Great, you know, great information and everything, but we always talked about how somebody like him can come into these spaces, can be accepted, can make good money, and everybody be like, oh, wow, I never thought about that. While in the meantime, there have been Black creators, Black advocates that have been saying this information forever, and now all of a sudden, because he comes in. And so that's what inspires me, is that I know the uphill battle you face in this space, but yet you still show up unapologetically. And, you know, It's a lot I've learned. One of the things about being an ally, you got to learn how to shut up. So I'm about to shut up now.
Okay. So I think it took me about the second year of my business to figure out who my audience was, right? So when I left my position before I started my company, I worked as a director for a pharmacy. And one of the things that made me want to leave that work was I saw how Black and brown employees were treated in the workplace, right? Like the culture was set up to be against them and how defeated people felt in the workplace. And I was just one person, one manager, one director in a sea of, and I was the only Black one there, right? And so I was like, okay, so how do I take what I know how to do, which is build really good cultures and make people feel seen and make people feel validated, and then give that out, like not just in this one place. So I started my business that way. And when you first start a company where you're going into companies to help them with culture or diversity, equity, inclusion, you're appealing to the people who can hire you, which is the company. And the first year I just sounded like everybody else. And I was like, I'm pandering to companies. This, like, what is going to make me different going in than anybody else if I'm sounding like corporate? I'm sounding like what they all already have, and it doesn't work. And so I'm going to go into this company and still leave employees vulnerable. And I'm like, so who is my client? Who is my audience? And so now I just started talking to the people in the company, like forgetting about this, the HR department, forgetting about the CEO, forgetting about anybody who could actually hire me. And I started talking to the employees. So that's why when I'm online, I'm speaking to the employees. And that has worked because the people who have hired me has been the directors of their departments or the VPs or the managing partners in the law firms. And it's not HR that's hiring me. It's not the CEO or the COO. It's the actual managers working every day saying, how do I work with you so that I show up better for the employees, right? And so yes. I just find a different way to get in. And so once I realized, I was like, okay, you have to talk to the employees, and the voice that you use to talk to people is very different than the voice you're going to use to talk to a company or an organization that you're trying to get to hire you. And I was like, well, they're not my clients per se, the people are my clients. And so I started speaking to them.
Definitely. You speak to us for sure. You know, that was one of the challenges I faced, you know, prior to retiring from the Air Force is we had, you know, during the pandemic, the George Floyd, and now everybody wants to get involved. But
yeah.
You started feeling that sense of tokenism. We're just doing this because everybody's feeling a way. And what are the ways? And I'm like, you know what? I've been Black and in this Air Force my entire career, my entire life. Like, this ain't new. And while it felt good at first, I knew this wasn't going to be substantial. I knew we were just talking to people who were feeling a temporary emotion, and then they get back to their normal and move on. So yeah, that is a big, big deal. And you speak directly to it. So what inspired you to get into, I mean, obviously your company that you were in, but bigger picture, what made you say, hey, I need to get into this lane?
I think for me, I really love Black people. You know, like people say, I love my people, but I really do love Black people. Like the kindness of Black people, the empathy of Black people, the goodness of Black people, the soul, the flavor of Black people. And when you love Black people, I feel like loving Black people is a version of deeply loving yourself, right? Like we've had to love ourselves in ways that no other group has had to, because we were forced to, because everybody else, everything around us said, you're not lovable, you're not worthy. And so I just love us so much. And so I was like, well, what can I do to help us, even in small ways? And sometimes the work that I do is helping individual Black people themselves. Like, you don't have to stay in a job that treats you badly simply because you think you can't have anything else. Like, or you think you can't, there's nothing better. And so a lot of the, for me, it was like, how do I help Black people just love themselves? And then second to Black people was just loving women, right? Like, In our society, we're in a hierarchical caste system. So the caste system we know is racial, and then the hierarchical system we know is man, woman, right? And so my love for Black people and my love for women made me just go, I want to do work that speaks to those two groups. And those tend to be my clients. I speak to women.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And it's important. I say this all the time. So as somebody who was raised by Black women and still took time to get how amazing, like I say all the time, Black women are superheroes. We should just stop tripping and give them the reins. I had a personal experience. We were in the airport a couple of months back, me and my son. And I normally call the TSA, you know, for special needs and everything so they can help. But they never got back to me. So I said, well, you know what? My son does okay. We'll just work our way through it. There's a Black woman there that just kind of saw us going through our normal and no words spoken. She knew exactly what to do. She just called us over there. We went through with no hassles and everything. And I said, I have this experience every time I'm out somewhere. Black women always make the processes and the procedures so much better, easier, effective. They always make me feel loved and special. And I'm just like, if you ain't had a Black woman love you, you need to go get some. That's probably why I saw them guys in your inbox. I had to do it. I'm sorry.
They do stay there, John. They do stay there. Now, can I tell you that is so healing for me, because especially in the social media age, there's so much conversations with Black women and Black men, and it's always so adversarial, right? Like how Black men don't like Black women, how we're too masculine, how we're too bossy, how we want this and we want that, and we want to be treated like white women, and we want to be taken care of. And Black men, this kind of resistance that I see online. Now, this is online is very different than real life, right? But that we see online, this kind of, particularly from Black men, that we're not appreciated in that way. So it's really like balm to me to hear you talk about us in that way. So thank you. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And again, like I said, even somebody like me that came up raised by my grandmother, my mom, my aunts, and just nothing but Black women, I still, because the socialization in this country and in this world, you know, just teaches you that hierarchy that you talked about, the patriarchy, the racism, the classism, the elitism, things.
Yeah.
And I still had, growing up under majority women, I still had patriarchal mindsets that I still had to break myself up. And again, like I tell everyone that wants to be an ally, first step to allyship is to shut up and listen. Stop trying to tell somebody how you need to be their ally and figure out what the subject matter experts know and where they need you, not vice versa. So
you seem very emotionally intelligent. And I don't, you know me, I date them all, but you seem very emotionally intelligent. And there's not a lot of men who seem to be emotionally intelligent, or I find in touch with themselves emotionally to talk about, you know, feelings and realizations and things that they've come to learn. Where did you get that from? Or has it always been a part of who you are? Because I will tell you, for me as a woman, the hardest thing for me to find in a lot of men, even the men that I date, and I'm talking about men who are doing well in terms of career and finances, and men who are just regular dudes, is this self-awareness and emotional intelligence and the ability to articulate what they feel and what they learn. So where did you learn that from?
So two things, y'all. She's not interviewing me on my own podcast. She's interviewing me on my own podcast.
How did I say this like, okay.
That's okay. And that's okay. And also, y'all hear that she's breaking it down. I'm starting to win, y'all. Y'all see me winning the battle. She's like, I've never met. See, it's happening.
I'm just gonna smile.
A lot of it came from trauma. A lot of it is extremely trauma influenced. Because I don't realize that I project in a certain way. Like, to me, I'm just me, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember people used to tell me, "Yeah, you look like somebody that came from, you know, middle class background, two parent home, blah blah blah," right? And I'd be confused. I'm like, well, what does that look like? Like, explain that to me. Like, you know. But I was like, it's absolutely the opposite. You know, at a young age, I grew up in a project. You know, saw a lot of violence, lost friends to violence, I tell people all the time, at a very young age, I had an experience that we call Sonder, where I realized that everybody else was not experiencing life the exact same way as I am. Even if it's in the same place, the same moment, people experience it differently because of how unique we are. So I've always been curious. I'm enjoying this moment, but how are the people around me experiencing this moment? Or maybe I'm not enjoying this moment. How are they experiencing it? So that curiosity, empathy from trauma. And so it set me on a lifelong path, but I think there was still knucklehead. Like, once a knucklehead, it's hard to not be a knucklehead. So there's still a lot of knuckleheading. But losing my son's mother and having to become the parent that not only sets the structure, but also does the nurturing, tapping into nurturing side over this last 6 years has really been a cheat code for me. So,
Oh, I could definitely see that. I could see that. I've been on your TikTok for a little bit, and you know, you post a lot about your son, and it's so refreshing to see you with him. And I could see the nurturer that you are with him. And so I could see that. But I was just curious, like, how did you get to be this man that seems to be very emotionally aware, emotionally intelligent, and not, afraid to have these conversations? Because I think, you know, men in our society, a lot of times as women, and I think, I will own some of this too. I don't think that we often create space for men to be soft with us, because mm-hmm. for as much as women complain about the patriarchal system, a lot of us are bought into it as well, right? Like, we still want, like, if you ask a woman, the woman still wants the man to be the man. Like, you're going to take care of everything, and I'm going to be the home, you know, sprinkle, sprinkle. Like, I don't build, I move in and decorate kind of woman, right?
And I saw that on your TikTok too.
I don't build. I move in and decorate. But we want that kind of a man, but we still don't want all of the toxicity that comes with that man. But the truth is, a lot of toxicity is going to come with that man, because he's still operating in that patriarchal lens as well. And so, you know, I think we each have work to do around that. So it's refreshing.
I think as a man, we have to really be willing to look at systems, a lot of times we want to take the systems and place individual blame because of the system. And sure, you've met a woman that hurt your feelings. You was a nice guy and you did all of this and it didn't work out. Maybe you got dogged or whatever. That's humans. You know what I mean? That's a one-on-one. That's not something that you can take and extrapolate and put all the way across all women. You had an experience. We've all had experience. She probably had an experience like that. But I think we do have to be careful as men, you know, when we talk about... And this is not supposed to be a date. And I said this explicitly to Adam, but here we are. I think a lot of men don't understand the fact that, you know, if you think about it, the Fair Credit Act of 1979, women weren't able to have their own bank accounts and credit cards prior to 1979. And so what's happening is men are having to learn how to deal with an empowered woman and be able to bring more to the table than just, I'm the man, I can take care of stuff because the law benefits me. Now, men have to come in with conversation and emotional intelligence and understanding. And for a lot of these guys who are learning from their old player uncles and their grandpas, that was, you know, like, I love my grandfathers, but man, relationally, I don't want to be like them at all.
You know? Your grandma probably was not happy, right?
Lot
of women weren't happy. You were with men because you had to be with them. And mm-hmm. I think to your point, like, men haven't adjusted, like, women now have to actually like you, right? Because they don't actually need you. And if you meet a woman that says, I want to need you, like, that in itself is a gift, because mm-hmm. she doesn't have to even want to need you, right? Like women can say, and I don't even think men see it that way. So men see, like, if a woman comes in and says, I want to want you, but I also want to need you, right? Men hear, oh, she's a gold digger. She want me to pay all the bills. But I don't even think you understand the gift that it is that a woman says, I want to need you and I want to want you. Because you know she doesn't have to need you. She can go and she can make her own money. She can do her own jobs. She doesn't have to need you. And so if you meet a woman that says, I want to need you and I want you, it's a gift. And men haven't adjusted that we actually have to like you. I want to tell you a story because this happened to me last night and I actually disqualified.
Let's go. Let's go.
So I, you know me, I'm in these streets. I'm in these dating streets. And so I matched with this man and he is a Jewish guy. And we're talking on the phone and first few minutes it's going good. And so to his credit, he's like, you know, ask me anything. I'm an open book. And so we start talking and, you know, I ask him, is he, you know, how was dating for him and, you know, all the stuff. And he's like, dating, he goes, like, I've gone on a few dates and he goes, he said he, you know, if the women and him get along, they go to bed together. Now, that's not how I date. Like, you're not taking me to bed, but, you know, whatever. And so I said to him, then he said something to me. He said, but if I take a woman to bed on the first date, she never gets a second date with me. And that did not sit right with me. Like that, ooh, that was so gross. And I was like, so why would you take her to bed then? Like if you know,
right?
If you know going to bed with her is going to mean you don't actually want to be in a relationship with her, because whatever you think that says about her, right? And I'm not here to debate that, but whatever you think that says about her, then why would you take her to bed? And he says, well, you know, they take me to bed. And I said, no, you still have a choice, right? Like you could decide that this woman has demonstrated that she is willing to sleep with you. And if that makes you feel some kind of way about that woman, you already know what you need to know about her without having to actually sleep with her. Because that woman is probably taking you to bed thinking she needs to do that to get you to like her more, while you know her doing that is going to make you like her less.
Oh, and he stood on that? He thought he was eating with that?
So he says, well, you know, so he saw, I'm like, so that was like ding number one. He's like, why do I feel like my honesty just kind of costs me here? And I was like, no, I don't think I said, your honesty actually is refreshing. And I said, I'm going to tell you right now, I actually appreciate the honesty. I said, but let me put it to you this way, right? I said, you're a man with means, right? I said, now imagine if you and I go out for about 3 months, right? And my dream car is a Lexus, right? And you have the ability to buy this dream car for me. And I know I don't really like you like that, but I definitely want that car from you. And I know if I hang out with you a little bit, if I, you know, do the thing, because you still ain't taking me to bed, it's only been 3 months. But if I do all the things and all of that stuff, right? And I know that you really like me and you really want to impress me in a way that that woman thinks impressing you will give her, means giving her her body to you. And if I think you really want to impress me, I said, could you imagine walking into a Lexus dealership and paying $50,000 to $60,000 for a car, putting a bow on it, and right after you give me this car and I have the title, I then say to you, you know, I don't think this is going to work. Ooh. And he goes, my feelings would be hurt. He goes, but it's just money. You know, I have money. It's just money. I said, it's not about the money. You're missing the point of what I'm saying to you. I said, you would feel used. You would feel misled. You would feel like somebody took advantage of your goodness, took advantage of your intentions for why you were doing the thing for me. I said, and that wouldn't feel good. I said, and I'm only talking about things in the material sense because men are attached to their materials.
The perfect way to make it make sense for him.
I'm like, men are attached to their money. They're attached to their cars, their possessions, right? I said, that woman is attached to her body. And so she's giving you her possession in the hopes that it's going to yield for her what she wants, which is probably for you to like her and be in a relationship. But you already know that's not what it's going to yield. So why would you take her to bed? You know, and he was like, well, you're right. He goes, it's probably not the right thing to do. And he goes, but you know, and then he says, but you know, sometimes it's hard, you know, the little head, you know, takes over the big head. And when things get hard, and I said, well, that's strike number two for me. And I'm like, thank you for the honesty. I said, because I do not want a man who's not sexually disciplined.
So wait, you gave him three strikes? I thought he was going after the first strike.
Well, we were still in the conversation. Okay, so when he was saying it, I was like, well, that's just another ding on you. I said, because that tells me you have no sexual discipline. I said, and you'll be the man that comes home and say, you know, I was at a party and she was touching on me and, you know, what am I supposed to do? Right. I said, so you're not sexually disciplined because you know you don't want this woman and you don't have the sexual discipline to not take it to bed. I said, so, yeah, we don't even have to go on the first date, buddy. I'm like, and so I really do appreciate this phone call. I do.
Yeah.
I'm like, that saved me, you know, a cute wig, honey, outfit, makeup, gas, time. I don't have to waste any time, you know. And I tell men, I'm like, I know y'all are on these dating sites thinking women just want dinners. I'm like, do you know the effort it takes for me to sit across from you? Like, it takes effort. I can buy my own meal.
Yeah.
I do great getting in my bed and just kind of like reading a book and eating what I want. I like getting dressed and putting on perfume and doing my hair and my makeup. Like, I mean, there's some women, you know, times are hard. There's some women that are doing that. I said, I'm not that woman. I don't need a meal.
That's why I mean, just get off the day naps and then just right here. You know what I'm saying? Right here.
Get off the ads and get in the friend zone.
Just, come on, man. Just right here. Right.
Can I tell you, when you left that comment on one of my videos.
What comment?
It was on LinkedIn. And you was like, that's why you need to get off these apps and get in.
Oh, I did say that. You're right. I did say that.
And get in the FZ. I'm like, FZ? I'm like, what the hell is John talking about? And I'm like, oh, shit. It's so hard to date men that I'm friends with. It's so hard.
I can imagine because I've been there. I've had close friends that, like, they were really my friends, and then they wanted to take it there. But see, you don't know me yet, so you know what I'm saying. You just randomly, arbitrarily put me in the friend zone. Like, you don't know me.
Okay, so here's what I know, which is why you are a friend. I do consider you a friend. What I know about you is I find that you are incredibly kind, incredibly empathetic, emotionally mature, professionally accomplished. And I just think you're a good human, right? And I think in the world of man-woman relationship, it's hard to find, like, and particularly men on LinkedIn. And I think I think this is why you got friend zoned, if I'm going to be completely honest. LinkedIn, but not just you. Like there's a friend I have. He's in Virginia, too. He's a Pisces in Virginia. And he said to me, he says, it's easy to be friends with you, Tammy, because we don't live in the same state. He goes, I'm going to be completely honest with you. If we lived in the same state, I probably would ruin the friendship because I would damn sure be trying to get out of the friend zone with you, right?
I hear him on that. Amen, brother. Amen, brother. I hear you on that.
But on LinkedIn, where the men can be so crass and the men can be like you wouldn't expect men in that space to behave like they do. And so many of them behave in the most egregious of ways. So when I do come across a man on LinkedIn who is respectful and is professional and is courteous and is kind, immediately I want to be friends with that man, right? Because the other men...
Yeah, I hear that, fellas. Being nice and a gentleman and kind gets you put in the friend zone, man. I don't know if it's worth it for you. No, I'm kidding. I appreciate your friendship. I do.
But you get what I'm saying? Like, when you
I get what you're saying.
Especially in that space, when all the men you encounter either are condescending jerks who think they know more than you, smarter than you, and...
You know what? She could talk and talk and talk about that, but she ain't gonna be able to make that make no sense to me, but I'm gonna accept it because, like I told her before we started recording, it is an honor to be your friend. But since we talk about all these great things, let's talk about the self-empathy worksheet. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay. I'm so happy to do this because I'm really gonna interview you on your own podcast because
all right.
when you sent me the message, you was like, I did your scorecard and it was really powerful. And it's funny because I've had a few men, you know, like women will always say, oh, it was great. I really enjoyed it. It was a great tool. Like, I learned so much about myself, or I'm really struggling, or I'm going back to this area. So when men say they do the scorecard and they say, oh, it's powerful, or I'm sitting with myself, or I scored really low, or I want to go back to that, tell me, I think you said it to me, but here on the podcast, like, what were the areas that you found the hardest for you, and where are you sitting with it now?
That's what we're going to do. Okay. All right. Okay, No, it's fair. Wait, it's fair.
No, before you answer it, let me tell you what the scorecard is. So it is.
Talk about the scorecard. Yeah.
So the self-empathy scorecard is a personal development tool, and I designed it to have 8 different sections and 8 questions in each section. I didn't want to make it too long, but I didn't want to make it campy like something. I wanted it to be questions that really get at who are you. How are you showing up in the world? How are you showing up for yourself? And so there's 8 sections on the scorecard, and then there's 8 questions in each section. So you're going to be sitting there for a while. And I wanted it to be where people actually sit with themselves. Like I think in today's society, we do everything to run away from ourselves, whether that is getting ourselves lost in social media, or lost in drugs, or lost in alcohol, or lost in relationships, or lost in, you know, underneath men or on top of women. And I wanted people to do something that requires them to actually sit with themselves and approach those questions that make them look within. And so that's what the empathy scorecard is, and that's what it's designed to do. So I want to know from John, like, the areas that really... Did you do the empathy or the self-empathy one?
Self-empathy.
Okay. So I'm going to say the thing that I bombed, like, it was so bad. I almost didn't go to section 3 because section 2 took me out. Like, that self-compassion section was, and I didn't realize how, and this is why I really enjoyed the card, because until you're sitting with those questions, I don't think we realize how mean we are to ourselves.
And because of that, I'm going to definitely plug the link for y'all to go get the self-empathy scorecard. You need to check it out. And it, you know, it's not, you know, cost prohibitive at all, but it's really going to help you get deep. And that's where I struggled. I was so glad personal development came after that, because I needed some wins after that beating I took.
True.
Somebody said, celebrating myself, in asking for help, in speaking kindly to myself, being encouraging when things aren't going my way. I had to be honest and say, I don't do these things well.
Oh man, I don't. I think I was telling you that too. I'm like, for me, like the biggest thing for me was or is asking for help. And I think you said it's hard for Black women, or just women in general, especially because there's been times where you felt let down. And so once, you know, I think you were talking about this earlier, like once you've had an experience, and this is something for both men and women to work through, right? Like, yeah, that woman messed it up or screwed it up for you. That woman didn't do well by you. That woman. And that was another thing I said to this guy, because he had a really bad divorce. And I said to him, I said, this is why you have to treat people well. I said, because what you do to these women when you sleep with them and you know you have no intentions of being with them, you cause harm, and you make that woman put up another layer that wasn't there before.
Exactly.
And another man is going to have to work to break that down. I said, in the same way that you had a bad divorce, and now when you come to women, now I'm having to do work. If you and I were together, I would have to be doing so much labor for the hurt that some other woman did. And I'm like, so personally, the way that I live my life, as much as I can, I'm never going to intentionally cause somebody harm, right? Like if we are trying to date in good faith, I may harm you in that process. You may harm me, but I'm not intentionally setting out to harm you, knowing I don't really have any intentions of dating you, right? Like,
right. You're not going to bring harm to the table and be like, here, take this.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, possible harm is the cost of admission when you're trying to date and fall in love.
Human beings. Yeah. It's the cost of admission.
That is the cost of admission. So I understand that you may hurt me. I may hurt you. You may harm me. I may harm you, but we can come back and we can fix that. But I'm never going to intentionally harm anybody, because that's another layer of brick that people have to put up. So when I was sitting with the scorecard with the compassion, I was thinking, how many layers that I have allowed from myself, from other people's trespasses of me? And so we can sometimes internalize other people's trespasses as something that's inherently wrong or bad with us. And we don't know that we've done that until we're sitting and we're going through these questions and we go, well, why are you so mean to you? Like, I would never be that way with you, right? Like, I would come into a conversation with you and, you know, you said, you know, like when you posted about your wife, right? Because I didn't know that your wife had passed. I didn't know, right? Because we've never gotten that deep. You know, like, we're online friends, but I didn't know. But when I saw it, immediately I was like, oh, like just right in the gut, that thing hit me, right? And so if I could have that kind of compassion for you about something so painful, why when something painful happens to me, I can't have that for myself?
Exactly. And that's where that doggone self-empathy scorecard whooped my tail, man. I'm like you. I didn't want to go in, but I was like, this is stuff that I've addressed in therapy. So like, as difficult as it was to see, it wasn't a surprise because I knew, I was aware of it. But that didn't make it any easier to see it, you know, but I was aware of these weak spaces. Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
I'm going to keep working on them. Like, they're sitting there right before me. They all in my face now, you know? You got words around them that trigger things. Yes, so like,
Yeah. I like that. You have words around them now.
Yeah.
You have words around them. I think that's a really good way to couch that, John. You have words around it, because you may be sitting with the feeling about it, but you didn't know to ask yourself those questions that elicits those answers inside of you, so that you do have words around it now. And then why I think once you have words around it, you can sit with it. For me, I started sitting in my meditation and just paying attention to, like, observing my thoughts and not trying to stop them and not trying to talk myself into positivity, but just observing the thoughts as they come and then saying, why are they coming?
That's been my work in 24. It's like, prior to this, I've been really trying to run from the negative feelings, suppress it, run from it, do the loop to loop, the circles, all of that. But in 24, and it's worked. It really has worked to just sit with it, to feel it, to, you know, do all of that other stuff. You know, it's been a couple of ugly cry moments. You know, I ain't afraid to admit that, you know.
I was going to ask you, do you cry? Because I... Man, I'm a Pisces, so I'm sensitive anyway, but I'm already sensitive, but I think the strong Black woman trope stops a lot of us from just having emotional cries and saying, I can't do it on my own, but I want somebody to rescue me and I don't have to do it, right? And I think to some degree, I think men want to be rescued, but not in the way that women want to be rescued, but they don't know how to articulate in the way that they want to be rescued.
I still can't, but I do know
that you want to be.
I know that there's some, I know I can do all this on my own, but I know I don't want to.
Yeah.
And not because I'm lazy or that I can't handle it, but because, so I will say this, you know, this was supposed to be the interview where we put all of your stuff out there, and this has become like a masterclass on dating and human relations. But I will say this, man, modern society has moved us to a place where we've gotten away from what's natural, and that's community. That's, you know, your tribe, your people. And once upon a time, when you were part of your community, if you were down, the tribe saw that as we're down. And so we're going to do what we need to do to get you back up. And yeah. Now we have all of this. I'll be in the midst of a tribe and everybody's good and I'm down. And I'll carry that like that's my own. When if my tribe knew I was struggling, they would want, like when people close to me are struggling, it's not a burden to help them. I want them to be okay. I want to help whatever resource I have. But then for yourself, and that's what the self empty scorecard showed me, when it's me, I just think I'm such a burden to people and I won't ask for help. Yes. And, yeah. So
I, you know, I really hate that about me, and I'm learning to be very careful, because I think we can become resentful of the gift that is the kindness, the goodness that is us, because, and I was saying to Vaughn, I'm like, I have to be very careful because it can send me spiraling into a depression that takes a while to get out of, because I'm very much like you. Like when my friends and the people I love around me are struggling, right? And for my friends, for a lot of them, particularly women who are single, it's a lot of them are financially struggling, right? And so right. There's so much that I can do. And when I can't do the thing that will just alleviate all of that for them, I carry that, like I feel it, right? And then I feel like, how do I get more resources? How do I get more money? Mm-hmm. Do I need to go get another job? Like, do I need to do something? Do I need to like pause the business, go find the job? And it's just so that I can help them, right? Because right. on my own, you know, I'm okay. But when I think about the people around me that need help, I feel like I need to do something more. And it's like, but who would you trust to help you? Like there's this honor in that people trust you to help them. But then who do you honor in asking those people to help you? And I'm like, I wouldn't ask anybody to help me.
Oh, look, my best friend, man, he always have my back. And I struggle with that. Like if somebody needs something from me, like I'm to the point I don't even loan. I'm just like, look, you wouldn't be coming to me if you didn't need it. Like, and I have it to give. I want, and I like you. I have friends and I just be like, man, I need to get my stuff even further up, because I want to be able to say, let me just eliminate this issue for you so you can go be exactly who you need to be. Like, cause this is keeping you from being you, you know? But for me, be like, look, if you loan me $5, man, I'm gonna go collect bottles all night so I can have that $5 back in your pocket with interest tomorrow morning, you know?
There's not a single person that I owe money to. And it's funny because I actually have a friend account. Like I literally put money in that account because I know, and again, these are all women trying, right? Like this economy is hard. So it's all my young, you know, girlfriends who are trying. And so I just leave money over there. And so, you know, when they come, I just kind of go there and give. And I'm the friend that they know that they can come to because I'm going to do that. And I was thinking, well, damn, who do I have? And it's not, and here's the thing. It's not that I don't have people that I can do that. It's me. I won't trust myself or trust them enough to even ask for help. And
you keep hijacking my conversation, but here's something I was thinking about the other day. I said, you know, that people that are really, really well off, the way that they approach that type of thing is, so me and you are friends, right? So let's say me and you are 7-8 figure earners. I'm not saying that you're not a 7-8 figure earner, but
I'm not.
Just for the case of it, let's just say
I'm not right now.
I'm working. I'm getting there. I'm close. Look, you know, it's just a couple of things and it's going to be there. But let's just say we were at 7-8, even 9 figure, you know, that kind of worth. And me and you are tight, right? And something happens where you're in a situation and I'm like, oh, well, you know, I need to drop 22 million right here to get Tammy where she needs to be, because at that level, they see the flow of things. They don't see it like, oh, I loaned you this, but they see it like, if Tammy is not in the position that I'm used to her being in, the flow of our entire super rich, balling out community is interrupted if Tammy ain't in place. Yeah. And I think I think when we aren't to that level, we're tighter, you know, it's pride. It's because I think I don't want to speak for you, but I know it's just like, I don't want to be on somebody because they, and then they had that over me and then they saying, yeah, you know, you loaned John some money and he can't get you your money back. And just all of that. And it's pride when people that are in position to help, you know, they'd be like, I just want to see you okay. You know? So, yeah. And we could probably talk about this all day.
I don't know who listens to the podcast, but I don't need 22 million. 500,000 would be great.
Okay. Listen, if you got a million, 500 for her, 500 for me, you know, I'll pay the finder fee for your million out of mine, you know.
Exactly. whoever hits this podcast, it's only, you know, it's half a mil will set me up pretty nice.
I won't be complaining.
I will not be complaining at all. But no, I get that. And I definitely want to be in that position to drop whatever monies, whatever the amount is that gets my friends or the people that I know into creative flow to put more good out into the world, right? I think a lot of the people who are doing a lot of the good work just don't have the capital.
I'm gonna put something on you. You're gonna be upset with me, but that's what friends are for. Ain't that what the song say? That's what friends are for. In 2024, for you to get to the level to be able to empower people to the level that you want to empower them, it is going to require you to let go of some of that pride and allow yourself to so be helped in the way that you want to help others. That's my gift to you. Mwah! Yeah, I want to get to that. Well, I want to encourage everybody, the empathy and self-empathy scorecards. I would say, man, make them things electronic and jack up the price, man, because that was way too affordable for all of that value.
Okay, now you're sounding like everybody. Yeah. My girlfriend's like, this is too cheap. I'm like,
it is.
The reason I did it, right, was...
There's always a reason. I know you did it for a reason.
No, I did it because I really want, for me, it's more important to get the work into the world than it was about, like, the cost. Like, I didn't want to make it cost prohibitive. The push is getting people to commit to the work.
Right, and there's a lot of analytical data you can get from it by getting more people to it. But I will say this, and this is something I'm working with myself, is that when we don't charge enough for the gifts that we bring into the world, then we don't actually have enough to help the way we want to help. So if we charge what we really are worth and made the money from the people that can afford to pay, then we can help all these people that we want to help because we would have the abundance. But while we continue to undercharge for this greatness that we continue to put out into the world, we won't have enough to help the people that we really want to help.
All right. So just so you know, when I jack up the pricing, I'll be like, you guys can thank John Singletary.
Send them to me. Come follow me. Holler at me. You got to follow me to get in my inbox. So follow me. Inbox me all the mean, all the curse and all that. I'm here with you. I might even sponsor you if your argument is compelling enough.
John, do you know we're not actually connected on LinkedIn?
I know, because I can't inbox you. I just follow you.
What do you mean you can't invite me?
I can't inbox you.
I know, but I'm saying...
And like certain stuff you put, if you cut the comments off, it'll say only people connected with Tammy can... Yeah, I know. I only follow you.
Okay, so, but why didn't we connect? Why didn't we connect on LinkedIn?
That's on your end, not mine.
You didn't send me an invitation to connect.
I click whatever button to click. Nah. So it has me... I'm following you. Like your stuff shows up on my timeline all the time.
Does it?
Yeah, I see you at least 4 or 5 times a day.
All right, I'm you said it like it's so annoying. I see you.
It's like I know what you got going on. That's why I was like, oh, she on TikTok. Yeah, I'm gonna go follow on TikTok too, because you know you be sharing a lot of TikTok videos to LinkedIn. So yeah, no, I mean,
okay, I'm gonna send you an invite. You
asking me why we not connect? I don't have control over your.
No, okay. I'm so used to people like sending me connects, right? Like, so I'm like, did y'all ever send me an invite? And I just didn't accept the invite. And so I, when I looked, I'm like, oh no, I never asked to, you know, to connect. And I want to thank you for this opportunity, friend. And I will encourage people that's listening to this podcast and watching it, go get your empathy scorecards and start doing your work. And get it before the price goes up. Because, John, get it before the price goes up.
Tell them where they can find you.
So you can find me on LinkedIn, Tammy Triolo, T-R-I-O-L-O, Tammy with a Y, not an I-E. And I'm on TikTok as My Style File or Delusional Influencer. You can find me either one of those handles.
If you see delusional with lots of spaces between the letters, that's her.
That's me.
Yeah, so TikTok, LinkedIn.
I'm not on Instagram. I can't get into the gram. I mean, I have a profile there, but you're not going to see nothing. Last time I posted there was probably 2 years ago, so.
She's doing a thing on TikTok and LinkedIn. Yeah, so there's no need for her to do all of that. You're going to find her. Go on there, get the empathy and self-empathy scorecards. They are amazing. They are going to bust you upside your head. but now I appreciate you taking time. Again, like I said, I shot my shot and you were just like, yes, I would love to come on the invite. So I really appreciate that. I appreciate all your kind words. And I'm gonna come to Florida. We're gonna go out, and we're gonna be best. What are we? Best dressed besties.
We're the best dressed friends. We're the best dressed friends.
Best dressed friends. There we go. Yeah.
Can I tell you? I so appreciate a man that actually cares about like fashion and style, because that's another thing. So, one last Pisces before I get out of here. You know how I told you, like in our head, like. Like we create our own fairy tales about who our man is going to be. Like my ideal man got to be a sharp dressed man. You got to be sharp. You got to be tall. You got to be accomplished. You got to be chivalrous. You got to be a gentleman. You got to be like, that's my woman. I take care of her. Like her money is play money. I take care of my woman. Like if you ain't that kind of, like my money got to be play money.
We're going to come back next year and we're going to see where this friendship is.
So when you get dressed up, I'm like, oh man, because like the rest of my guy friends don't dress up. Like they don't like fashion and style. And I'm like, I want to go out with a man and we look like we belong together. Like,
me and you looked in them pictures that you posted on.
Yes! Did we not?
Yeah,
I went on your thing. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna post this because that dress matches his coat, and then your blue and your shirt with that the other blue dress. I'm like, I want to be with somebody where people go, that's a stylish couple. That's a stylish couple, and boy, does that man love her.
Y'all check back in a year and see where we at.
Okay, so in a year, hopefully John and I are seven-figure earners.
I'm not big on hoping, man. Let's just make it happen.
Okay, we're going to be seven-figure earners, and I will not be living in the state of Florida. I don't know where I will be living, but I will not be here in a year.
Tammy's going to have she's going to have multiple residences.
John, mm-hmm. I agree.
We have to normalize conversations of affluence. We have to normalize that. Well, thank you again for coming out and hanging out with us on the Help Myself Podcast. I feel like we're going to have to do this again soon because I think we didn't cover everything. So, you know,
if you invite me back, I'll come back for sure.
Bet. You know, I'm not going to overuse that invitation, but I will use it in a way that is beneficial for both of us. There we go.
There you go. Well, thank you, John. I enjoyed this.
Absolutely. I had a time.
We had a time last night.
I knew we was going to vibe, but I didn't think it was going to be this good. It was cool. Yeah. Now, I told you that conversation went all kind of places that I wasn't even prepared to, but we had a good time. The energy and the chemistry was great. And so I'm so thankful and grateful that Tammy has some time to come by and share with us. I do want to encourage you to go and get you a copy of the empathy and the self-empathy postcard scorecards. And make sure you go check her out, man. She is having those difficult but direct and straightforward conversations that we need to be having about ourselves, about our place in the world. And she is a woman that is out here making history day by day. So again, we want to thank her for being a part of the Help Myself podcast. And listen, I'm going to close the way I always do. Look, I can't help myself. Got to inspire. I've got to encourage. I've got to empower. But I can help myself by being the absolute best version of myself. And guess what? You can too. So why not we do it together? Till next time.